Hello and welcome to the last on the Time Lash Extra for Series 9. Mm-hmm. This is our Hell Bent episodes. Hiya, I'm Ben.
I'm Mark, hello.
And, so this is the day after the finale went out. And I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know how I feel about it. I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. I did certainly enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's just given me so much to think about.
Sure.
Which is surely the sign of a good, well-produced television programme.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing, because I don't know if any of you follow me on Twitter. I know at least two of you do, of the four. three, including Ben. I went on the internet last night with a lovely glass of whiskey in hand, and there was just loads of people.
This was after
I'd watched the episode.
Yeah, okay.
Sat down. Got my Twitter thing out. Took a wee look.
Got your Twitter thing out. Yeah. Your phone. You got my your phone, phone out.
I'm such a millennial.
Got my Twitter machine out.
And looked at what people were thinking.
Yeah.
It's always a bad idea. There was a lot of people that were annoyed at the fact that it was a lot of melodramatic bullshit, you know. Mm. And there was a tweet from the BBC Doctor Who Twitter account that said, how did the finale make you feel? To which somebody replied, it's not about how we feel. Doctor Who should never be about how we feel. I'm like, what does that mean? Surely any piece of art, any piece of theatre, any piece of television, it should make you feel something. Yeah. You know?
Well, it's singularly failed if it doesn't connect with you
on any level whatsoever. Yeah. So I find this very odd thing now where, and I don't know if it's the internet age, I don't know if it's just the way...
Let's just back up a minute.
Oh no, I'm going to start, I'm still on the feeling thing.
It's not, Doctor Who is not about how you're supposed to feel. Mm-hmm. Is essentially his argument.
Yeah.
So he wants to watch Doctor Who where he just feels
nothing,
completely void inside.
But I think it's a divorce, and I think this is partly to do with the internet age, and also partly to do with giving a mouthpiece. Borderline autistic, borderline people who aren't in touch with their emotions, who can voice these things, is that, you know, feeling sad or feeling moved or feeling is the same thing as feeling excited by action sequences, is the same thing as, you know, it's a different level of feeling, but you're still feeling something. And I think what people are kind of failing to grasp with modern Doctor Who is that you can have your cake and eat it.
Right.
You can have something that has this emotional realism. You can, in terms of love, because at the end of the day, what Hellbent is all about, it's about love, and about moving on and about loss. But at the same time, you know, the Doctor punches a man in the face and shoots him.
I hate that bit. I venomously hate that bit. And I've lost some respect for the Doctor because of that moment.
Wow.
That is such bullshit.
Yeah.
That is such... That
we'll
bit
come to
gets
that in a minute.
So fucking angry.
We'll get
that
to that
bit.
In a minute.
So angry.
We'll get to that.
Right, okay, so I...
But you know what I mean? You know, that's a ridiculous fucking argument. You know, the Doctor Who shouldn't make us feel anything.
Right.
Like, have you watched Trial of a Time Lord recently? Because that makes me feel something, and it's not a good something.
Yeah.
It's all of it makes you feel something.
Yeah.
That's the point. And just because, and I think a lot of it also comes down to...
So what he probably means, though, is that it's not supposed to be this, what he presumably he perceives as some sort of drippy, emo, fangirl type of...
What he, I think...
Wet adventure.
Yeah, what he...
Not, you know what I mean when I say wet adventure. Tears.
Ben Wirth's Wet Adventures with Fangirls. Coming soon to YouTube.
Jesus, I think I had a bit of that when I saw Clara and her shielder flying their own TARDIS. I was like, see that? See Class? I hope Class is a front for a much better spin-off, which is Clara and her shielder flying a TARDIS around the universe.
I think a lot of people expected it to be this kind of lore-heavy, of which a lot of it was.
I thought it was going to be Day of the Doctor.
It's like a big Gallifrey set Doctor Who adventure, when actually... you get enough of that, and then Stephen Moffat goes, ah, I've pulled the rug from under you. Actually, what this is about is all the Doctor's whole trip to Gallifrey, his whole removal of Rassilon, and his whole him sitting as Lord President of Gallifrey. It's not to protect him from the hybrid. It's to save Clara. And actually, what I find really clever about Hellbent is that, you know, right the way back to 2005, every finale, there's some sort of massive, world-shattering threat, and it's always a villain to be defeated or something like that. This time, it's the Doctor and Clara that are the thing that has
the
to be
baddies.
Stopped.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really clever subversion of what you expect a season finale to be.
Yeah.
And I think you're either on board with that, or you go, well, no. I want monsters being fought, I want spaceships blowing up, I want, you know... And Hellbent isn't that. It's actually quite a... And I think, because of this, I think it's one of the more successful finales to the series, because it actually ties up all the threads that have been dangling throughout the series quite neatly, in a way that's, you know, quite emotionally satisfying.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be talking about Journey's End quite soon. And I think that's quite a good comparison, because, you know, mind wiping and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the hybrid and all that. It's basically, it's a bunch of Daleks that hasn't really been seeded anyway through it. So, oh, there's some planets disappearing. Oh, the Earth's disappeared now. And it's the Daleks. Oh, and then there's a big massive space battle and none of it makes any fucking sense.
Yeah.
And now Catherine Tate has to have her mind wiped because she's not going to sign on for 4 special episodes. It doesn't... I've always had issues with the way Donna's written out the series, which we'll cover in much greater detail. But I think this, it puts the power in Clara's hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, no, I'm not going to have my memory wiped.
Yeah.
There's another way around this. And actually, fuck you if you think I'm scared of dying.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I want to go out, and that is how I'm going to go out.
Yeah.
But I might as well have some fun before that happens.
Yeah.
It's
when we talked about Face the Raven, and I was talking about that kind of, there seemed like there should have been something more.
Yeah.
We got the something more.
Exactly.
Sorry, just pause that for a moment. Listeners outside. So we're recording this back in our usual pub in Edinburgh, the Beehiving, and out on the Grass Market, the kind of the square outside the pub, is like a little winter market, and they've got a band playing outside because they're switching on the Christmas lights tonight. So if you can hear a kind of... I know in our last extra we did have a bit of a musical accompaniment, but what we have now is amateur musicians outside the building sounding dreadful, so we do apologise for that.
Sounding even louder than the sound system in the Kilding.
So apologies for that bleeds in. But yeah, no, what I was saying is that they felt like there was something more, and I thought that the something more was given to us in Heaven Sent. It was Clara had to die to be the motivation for the Doctor to get through that 4.5 billion years when he's in the confession dial. What we had was something more again, and it was an entire episode of it. And I felt slightly that, I felt slightly like maybe a whole episode was too much for it.
Possibly. I mean, I think... You know, there was a point...
But I say that not necessarily meaning it, but again, I'm still trying to process everything.
No, sure. Because I think
this is the main thing. There's what I wanted to have happen and what I thought should have happened.
Yeah.
What I wanted to have happened is exactly what we got. I didn't want Clara to be dead. I didn't want anything real... Well, she is dead, but she's dead in the way that it's a parable, would you say, maybe metaphor, allegory, whatever. It's what we are. We're all essentially dead.
Yeah.
She now understands that she's got this finite amount of time left to exist in, and she has to, rather than be this kind of weird, reckless, grief-stricken person, she's got to move on with her life, essentially, and make the most of what's left for her, rather than live in this kind of mournful Danny Pink.
Exactly, and she also gets to be the Doctor.
Yeah, which is what she's got. She's got a TARDIS, she's got pals, she can do whatever she wants. That's exactly what I wanted. What I kind of felt was, maybe they should have just left it at the Heaven Sent, kind of the she was the image in the Doctor's head that got her through, and that was where he began his healing process. You know, that oft quoted kind of idea in Doctor Who that nobody's dead so long as we remember them, that type of thing. And you know, but I guess that plays into the idea that when she came back, I knew the first thing people were going to be going, oh, nobody stays dead in Stephen Moffat's thing. And it's like, that's fine.
Yeah.
That is largely true, and that is fine. I don't really care about this, because this is not like, I don't know, EastEnders or the like. It's a science fiction program. It's a fantasy program. It's to make people happy.
As somebody pointed out on Twitter last night, it's not Game of Thrones.
No, not at all.
You know what I mean? And I think a lot of the people that kind of wanted Clara to stay dead, wanted it to be this grim, mournful dirge. That's not what Doctor Who is. That's never what. Even at its darkest, there's some wackiness. There's something. There's just like a little moment of charm. There's something reassuring in there. Yeah. It's never this sort of bleak, unrelenting horror.
Yeah.
And I think I don't understand where people get this idea that it is.
Well, that's maybe because, well, we'll get onto that in a minute. I just want to finish the thought.
Yeah.
The reason that possibly I felt that maybe having a whole episode devoted to it is that her being back alive again, I was like, of course she is.
Mm-hmm.
Of course the Doctor's going to find a way to change that.
Yeah.
So it didn't have anything, there wasn't anything perceptibly different about every other kind of Moffat-era companion or something, you know. But then there was just the idea that the familiarity, there was just so much more familiarity in this episode with other things as well. I found that the scene in the classic TARDIS with the Doctor and Clara was very, very like a lot of stuff in that kind of, that second season of Paul McGann and India Fisher Big Finish audios.
Okay.
The Eighth Doctor and Charlie, and the Doctor protecting Charlie from the Time Lords, because he saved her when she was supposed to die, and there was the cracking of the web of time, and he's protecting her.
Yeah.
And she's going, well, why are you doing this? And there's some sort of emotional kind of heft to the conversations. Mm-hmm. It was just like that.
But then that's never been done on television before.
No,
and
it's
I think
not,
that's kind of,
as a fan, familiar, and there was something a bit depleting.
And I think that's fair, but I think, I mean, obviously this is a Doctor Who podcast, so it's hard not to kind of, it's hard to then put your head into somebody that's just maybe just stuck with the new series or has watched bits and pieces of the old. You know, that it's the first time that those themes have been explored in televised Doctor Who.
Yeah. But if you're a fan,
if you're
take the whole artifice of Doctor Who with you whenever you watch something, and everything. And whether you can divorce the TV stuff, the canon stuff, from everything else, it's still there. You're always, Doctor Who's fandom is not so clear cut as that you're only educated by the television stuff. How, you know, if you're a classic fan, how much of what you understand of Doctor Who is informed by Terence Dix and his novelizations?
Yeah.
How much of what we do as kind of newer fans is informed by BBC books with the Eighth Doctor,
of course,
Big Finish audios, all that kind of stuff? And, you know, moving on from that, so that seemed familiar. Moving on from that is that, as much as we get to see Gallifrey, again, I personally find that Gallifrey was as disappointing and depleting nullifying as it always is. Because essentially, what is it? You get better visuals, but it's still a samey, whatever sort of planet populated by a lot of,
you see why he buggered off.
Kind of grey military types, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know, that would have been funny in the heavens then, when he went, I didn't, because I was scared. I was scared I was going to come a fucking boring asshole. And, you know, so there was just Rassilon.
He would have made a better Barusa.
Well, I mean, it was what
there wasn't
was,
enough Donald Sumter.
No, he was alright, he was pretty good.
He was good, but
but again, it just seems, so there's Rassilon.
Yeah,
that's the fabled god of all Time Lords. Okay, well, that's what that is then. Mm. And he's defeated by the Doctor going, get off my planet! Alright, okay, so Rassilon's out there and he's going to be back sooner or later, is he? That's what's going to happen. I just kind of felt the visuals look better. We've moved on from the 80s kind of fucking couches in the corridor.
It was a lot more coherent. It was, you know, it's what happens when Doctor Who's got a bit of money and a bit of love behind it.
Mm-hmm.
In that people are working to actually make it all seem like one plan. Because you get like something like the Invasion of Time.
Yeah.
And it's all these kind of weird, jarring bits of things, and then there's like a desert outside where the Shabugans live.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing as well, for talking about that. So, what is the Doctor then?
Well,
a highborn Gallifreyan, but what is he? Is a Shabugan? Why does he live?
Why was he out in there?
Where does he live? Where is that shed thing? Because there's no houses around about it.
There was a suggestion for me in things gone unsaid, and also like you take listen and stuff like that it was some sort of children's home.
Right, okay. Yeah. When the woman comes,
that woman comes in and he comes down and she sort of sees him and she goes, oh, you know, and gets him some food.
Yeah.
It seemed to me that this
like
building...
Like an orphanage or something.
In some sort of orphanage or some sort of children's home or something like that. And so that maybe he was a highborn Gallifreyan, but there was nobody within the Citadel that was to do. I mean, this is all stuff that I'm sure people will take from what it is, whatever it is they want to take from. And I think that's one of the strengths of Hellbent as well.
Yeah.
Is that Moffat kind of Stephen Moffat. Yeah. We'll call him Stephen Moffat. We discussed this last week. He plays with all these little things, like, you know, the half human thing, and just still lets you just make up your own mind.
Yeah.
And I think that's really clear. But then while adding new stuff, like, he's, you know, as a child, he lived out in the wilderness with...
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Why is that? What led him to that point?
Yeah. But having said that, the stuff on Gallifrey, when it wasn't about the politics and the Time Lords, I loved the Clint Eastwood Unforgiven type of...
Yeah.
You know, like, the coolest moment is him drawing a line in the sand with his boot.
Yeah.
And then nobody daring to cross that. I loved that one. I loved, you know, I just...
I love the whole thing, you know, where Rassilon's ordering the fire. Because it just shows the strength of the Doctor, and I think that's why, again, the Doctor's really the villain here, really, essentially, because he's come on to Gallifrey. He's like, right, you're gone.
Yeah,
I'm taking over. That's not necessarily going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, when, you know, Rassilon orders them all to find him, and they're like, no, we can't. This guy's a war hero. We stand with him.
And you know,
and that whole thing that he never uses weapons. He uses his knife.
Yeah, I love
the
bit that says, "Please put down all weapons about your person," and he puts the spoon down that he was eating soup with. I love that as a moment. You know, that, I suppose that's how I feel about it. There are, for every moment I didn't like, there's a moment I absolutely loved.
Yes,
and I think I'm going to have to do like the whole series again to really assimilate.
Oh yeah,
because there is so much going on there. And yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of it for me which is very kind of, it seems too familiar for me to properly feel like it was something completely different, which Death in Heaven, Dark Water, that was properly different for me when I watched it.
I think there's certain things it does that are quite different in terms of what it's about.
Yeah.
But then it still kind of boils down to that RTD era finale, in which it's an alien invasion.
Yeah.
In plain sight.
And
I think this feels very different because this is
the graphic quality
about the characters. This is about, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, I think the base there is that this whole season's arc I haven't bought into.
Okay, fair enough. I think that helps as well.
The hybrid and the concept, every time someone talks about the hybrid, the idea of it is constantly changed. Or going, well, no, I meant this, or this is maybe what it is. No, that's what I think it is. No, this is what prophecy says.
It's funny you say that, because, I mean, obviously, this is something Steve Moffat's come up with for this series.
Yeah.
But he's a writer that has always seeded things way, way, way back. Like, you look at, you know, Matt Smith's era.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff that happens in Time of the Doctor is all pretty much referenced in the 11th Hour.
Yeah.
Bits and pieces.
Yeah.
So that, you know, he could have quite easily seeded the whole hybrid thing every now and again, like maybe in something like Day of the Doctor.
Yeah.
So at least you're aware that it's some age-old Gallifreyan prophecy. You're right, it does feel a bit tacked on.
Yeah, well, but then I think that's maybe where certain deficiencies that I perceive in this series have come from, which is the main thing had to be that Clara was going to... This is, I think, I'm just going to talk through what I think of the writing process of the series. Is Clara's got to go. Clara is incredibly meaningful to the Doctor, more so than any other companion. She literally jumped into his time stream to save him all her lives, all his lives. She also is the person that made him change that real sea change moment in his life. He thought he was a murderer, a colossal, terrifying, terrible murderer, and she changed that about him. It was essentially her. So he owes her far more, and we as viewers essentially owe her far more. So her disappearance, her move, he's not going to be, sorry, I need to go see him.
It's
never going to be, it's going to be something almighty. And presumably there's got to be something involved in death. That's the way it was going.
Well, that's her story, isn't it?
Her story was all about life and death. So who is so big and powerful that can in some way stop Clara dying or remove her at the point of her death or something, so to give the Doctor a second chance with her? Well, it's obviously the Time Lords. It's 100% got to be the Time Lords. So then you start having to tack on all this other stuff going, well, how does the Doctor get back to Gallifrey? How do we? How does he find it again, or they find him? What does he do when he gets to Gallifrey? It has to be Gallifrey, so I guess we're going to have to show a bit of the local colour, or the fans will be annoyed. Yeah. That's why we've got a longer episode, and that's why there's that mini western at the start. And so what you have, they go, okay, well, if that's the thing, why do they eventually have to part then, if he's done that thing? Well, there's got to be more than a kind of, you're dangerous for me, I'm dangerous for you. We've got to enshrine it in some kind of prophecy, in some kind of mysticism within the show. So we'll say hybrid. Okay, so the hybrid, where do we start seeding that throughout the rest of the episodes, all that kind of stuff? That's probably what the thing is. So what it seems like with the central thing, and then possibly less successful elements tacked onto the side to justify getting to that point.
I mean, I think the hybrid thing aside, I think the general theme of travelling with somebody that's pushing you in a certain direction and is making you do things, and the things that you would do to protect that person or to save that person, I think that has all been seeded through quite subtly and quite well, so that it does actually come to quite a satisfying conclusion in the Ashildur storyline.
Yeah, I did. I mean, that was, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
In that, it's not really also, it's about Clara, but it's also about saying sorry to Ashildur.
Yeah.
In the most roundabout, grudging sort of a way. Yeah. Okay.
Because there's that whole thing about how, you know, he's like, oh, you know, you and I traveling together is no good.
Yeah.
That all then makes sense when you get to, because it's like, well, it would just be the same thing again.
Yeah.
He's already aware that something, you know, something has to change. And I think a lot of that's been seen. I think the hybrid thing is maybe not worth, I think its eventual solution, you're like, oh, okay, fine, great. But maybe I didn't completely buy into it as this world-shattering, universe-ending
prophecy. For me, it was slightly like the reveal that the master in RTD era can hear drumbeats. He goes, well, this has never come up before.
Yeah.
This has never come up before at all. And now you're expecting me to buy into it, and that's the motivation.
That's been there the whole time.
It's like, this is slightly bullshit, I feel, and I don't quite buy into it. And you kind of then question why. You question motivation that comes from that. You know?
Yeah.
However, the worst. Well, okay, if we're gonna get this all out of the way, stuff that I hated.
Okay, fine.
Stuff I absolutely hated. The shooting the general is unforgivable. Is bullshit. Absolute bullshit. First, the Doctor using a gun. I thought he was just going to wave it around and use his words to kind of whatever. But actually shooting the guy. Like, actually shooting the guy. And whatever you explain to Clara, and therefore the audience, by going, time death is just time lord for man flu, it's been well established it is not.
Yeah.
Because the change, if all we take is the change in Doctors, that is not a simple little hiccup in a continued life. It's a major thing.
Yeah.
To the point that we finally get in the end of time the 10th Doctor. So a comparable, regeneration with the general sitting down going, it is a death.
But the thing is, it is a death.
Yeah.
And he knows it's a death.
Yeah.
That's why he has that line. What regenerate? I don't know why I'm holding that gun. This isn't video. This isn't visual. But I am because it gets me in the character. You know, what regeneration are you in?
Yeah.
And it was a 10th or something. 10th. Like
yeah.
That. And he goes, okay, fine. And then shoots like. Doesn't just shoot him, but gives it some thought, and goes, well, this is the only way out of here, shoots him for distraction and leaves, and then sort of bluffs it to Clara. And I think, I mean, I don't think it's dealt with particularly well. I do kind of agree with you that it's an unforgivable act.
Yeah.
And that if he was to do it, it should be dealt with a bit more than just is it O'Hyla?
Yeah.
Going, you've betrayed every code that you've ever...
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, because you shot...
Yeah.
You
and
shot a man.
They try to get away with it by having the next general pick herself up, and they're going to go, ooh...
A black woman, let's not forget, a black woman.
I've no problem with any of that.
Well, no, that's fine, but, like, you know, it's like properly laying the groundwork.
Yeah, it's going, a black woman,
like, this can happen, can we just... Every time I turn up at a convention, can you stop asking me if I'm open to the idea of a black doctor or a female doctor?
Yeah.
Look, it can happen now.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. But like they try to defuse the situation by like the general getting up and going, oh, I don't know how you could be a man. Oh, that's bullshit. That is bullshit. All of this is bullshit, right? It is a proper, you've killed a man. It's a proper death. And I understand that from there, because it's unsaid, but I understand that there's like a proper madness, a mania within the Doctor, because he's 4.5 billion years focused on
himself.
One thing to save Clara. It's that it may drive him to do certain things, but it is so diminishing to have him shot someone who comes back to life, fine.
Yeah.
But we know that that's not how it works for Time Lords.
Yeah. No, true. I agree. I think that's why it's his mind that's wiped at the end.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't remember doing it, and he can still be the hero that we... But at the end of the day, we know that he's done a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think... I mean, I don't have as much of an issue with it as you do. I did wince when it happened. I was like, yeah. What? It's a bit...
Yeah. Particularly also as well, because I liked that character as the general.
Too. Yeah.
Like, I liked Ken Bones as the general.
Great name.
Yeah,
I didn't know if that was his name until watching the credits last night. I was like, but Ken Bones, what a name.
As a character, you just go, like, so you just told the president to bugger off your planet, but the guy who's actually your friend...
Yeah, and is on your side.
...is on your side here.
Yeah.
That, you're an absolute shit, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. And I know you're mad. I know you're mad at the time. You're mad at the wrong person. And you've killed. You've actually taken a gun and you've killed.
You're taking my life. I mean, I think the suggestion they tried to get away with it is that if that had happened on any other planet, it would have been more painful because it's like, oh, we're on Gallifrey.
Yeah.
Death's different on Gallifrey, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, you're right. It's still the Doctor gunning down somebody.
Now, maybe it did need to happen. Because there in one death, in a character that you care about, you can see that Clara and the Doctor, left to their own devices, would become
dangerous.
That dangerous hybrid of a thing. But I just, it felt so diminishing.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I understand why it's in there.
Yeah.
I think there's other things you could have done.
Yeah.
Without sacrificing... I mean, you know, we've always said in this podcast, you know, when we had Dr. Hooligan go for a while, and this would be
number one spot, Dr. Hooligan. None of this acid bath stuff going on, in Vengeance on Varos.
Yeah.
None of this gunning down two Ogrons.
Yeah, no, this is proper.
This is proper looking in the whites of a guy's eyes and shooting.
And gunning them down. And I think, you're right, it's necessary for that. And, you know, I don't ever subscribe to the idea that the Doctor's a pacifist. You know, he's a pragmatist.
Yeah.
He does what he has to do.
He's not perfect. He's not...
He does what he has to do to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he does. He's a pragmatist. He does what he has to do. And I think that's always been the thing with the Time War and things like that and what he had to do there. But, this Doctor, although he's mad, although he's... gunning down somebody doesn't quite sit right with me.
I mean, I don't know. I'm being harsh about it.
Shoot him in a kneecap or something.
Well,
in Person of Interest, if you've watched Person of Interest, proper dad telly.
Yeah.
But like the whole thing in that is like, you know, if you got to get out of somebody, don't kill the guy, just shoot him in the kneecap. You go, oh, ow.
I mean,
you
punched the guy.
Yeah.
You said, I'll try not to break your jaw. Mm. Meaning, he could break the guy's jaw. I might punch him unconscious then.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
He's clearly forgotten the Seventh Doctor's trick of just putting somebody to sleep by placing a finger on their forehead.
What about some Venusian Aikido?
Is that high?
Yeah, well, you know, it was probably, as I said, it was probably an essential scene. You got to see
how
bad things can go. They have to be apart, and you're right. It probably did take the Doctor's mind being wiped of that 4.5 billion years of mania, all that kind of stuff.
To put him right again.
But there was just, I don't know, it just, it left a sour taste in my mouth. But I don't know, is it a bad thing?
Maybe that's the point,
These things I'm feeling, is that a bad thing?
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it?
If there's one thing, I mean, okay, I've said that there were familiar aspects to it, but there were other things in this episode which you just cannot say that one thing that Moffat is complacent.
No.
There were certain familiar aspects and motifs, but there was some stuff the like of which you've never seen before.
Yeah. Because the thing is, the first thing, you know, I sort of said, was that it kind of subverts your expectations of a finale.
Yeah.
In that it's not the Daleks, it's not the Cybermen, it's not.
It's small.
It's a small emotional
chamber piece.
Between two characters that most of us love, with other characters that we recognise, and it's about the Doctor, and it's about his companions, and it's about the lengths he'll go to protect the people close to it.
But that's the thing. Like, more than that, like, a lot of people keep saying, "Well, why is Clara so special? Why is she so? Because he loves them all. Why did he not do the same with Sarah Jane?" It's like, but that's possibly for me something that the series has kind of failed at, is that giving Clara a life outside of the Doctor and having each of their adventures not continuous, so she can live in the TARDIS, but so choppy and changey, is that people kind of forget how important she was just 2 years ago, you know.
I agree. I think it was a misstep. I mean, I know why they did it, because you have that whole storyline of her trying to juggle both, and then look what happens, and then that leads into... I understand why, but I do think for Capaldi's first series, it was a misstep to have her just constantly having this life outside of him.
Yeah.
That sounds really sexist. I don't mean it like that.
No.
I mean, you know, it would have been fun to have a series in which it's the Doctor and the Companion having adventures, unsure of each other, but getting to know each other better as the series goes on.
We're still the main thing that connects them.
Yeah.
Which is that they've both lived and died for each other at some point.
Uh-huh.
And they've both done something so meaningful for each other at some point. And it kind of got watered down with the Danny Pink
thing. And I think series 9, and the reason I need to watch it again, the whole series from start to finish. But I do think, for me, it's quite possibly my favourite series of Doctor Who, maybe just after 2005, or since the last McCoy series, because I just thought it was amazing. And I think that's the clever thing they did, was they went, well, why no, let's have these two together, and let's just focus on what they mean to each other and all that kind of thing, because then it makes that payoff so, for me anyway, so emotionally satisfying. And I love the fact that when it opens, you think, oh, it's just he's turned up at this roadside diner to meet another Clara Splinter. But then as the episode goes on, you realise that he just stumbled into this place.
Yeah.
And he's just talking to a waitress.
Yeah.
And it's actually Clara. It's not.
It's the real thing. Yeah,
it's the real Clara. And you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of second guessing with Stephen Moffat, and you never get it right.
Yeah, we've exactly. Said this before. And I think that's why a lot of people don't like him.
Yeah.
Because they want something that they've seen before, or that they can second, or that they know. You know what I mean?
People
don't like to be surprised. People don't like to be taken a different direction.
Yeah.
I think what everybody expected from this finale was some epic Gallifreyan Time Lord. And we all know, all of us know, that that's never a good fucking thing.
No, it's not.
You know, Arkham Infinity. I mean, the Deadly Assassin is the only one that really gets it right. Invasion of Time has its moments, but...
Yeah, but you know, I just don't want him to go back there. I don't. If we're being uncharitable to the Day of the Doctor, whilst it's spectacular, the Time War stuff, it is also so fundamentally boring.
Because
it's just a
men
very,
in rooms.
It's a very linear, very normal battle. Now, I don't want to. The way that the world is at the moment, just to go, oh, but war is so boring and normal and shit like that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like there's nothing really different to what they're doing in Day of the Doctor to what they're doing in like a John Wayne war film or something like that. It's just a battle. It's just what it is. And so you just go, so really the idea of the Time War, where you have all of this floral language since 2005, and it just boils down to like just a pitched battle and some Daleks and some kids and all that kind of stuff. You know, like there's like, you know, we don't get to see what a nightmare child is. What we get to see is just a guy firing a gun.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that's the thing about Gallifrey, is the idea of it is spectacular.
Yeah,
and the only time they've ever done it right is part 10 of the War Games. I think.
Okay, all right.
You know, where it seems special and godlike and angelic.
Uh-huh.
Because that's how
true.
You know, or you know, maybe like a guy in Terror of the Autons or something like that. I just don't want them to ever go back there again. And now it's probably back. It's hiding. They found a way. Of course they found a way.
Of course.
In the Time Lords, of course they found a way.
I think that we're only probably, I don't know. You can never second guess Stephen Moffat, obviously. I think they needed to be the catalyst for the end of the series.
They were the only things that could give the Doctor the power of life and death.
Yeah.
Go back to who are the gods in Doctor Who mythology? It's the Time Lords. From
that's,
the very they're the ones that have life and death.
So hopefully that will happen again. It will only be we will only see the Time Lords if we absolutely 100% positively need to have the Time Lords.
Yeah.
Here's hoping. Because you're right. You're right.
Because what I do not want to see is fucking Rice Krispie-faced Donald Sumter running through Amsterdam in like 2 or 3 years' time. That would be
Arkham Infinity 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
Now this has been largely negative, and
I get every point you're bringing up.
This is me just working out what I feel about it. There are stuff that I love.
Mm-hmm.
The acting was exquisite all the way through it.
Yeah.
I know I was quite harsh about Maisie Williams as a Shielder when she first showed up in the series. Yeah. In this, she's electric.
She's absolutely brilliant. In the small scenes that she had, very important scenes that she has. Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah.
I love the Doctor coming out of his stolen TARDIS.
Yeah.
And she's just sat there in this leather armchair watching the universe end. That's such a great iconic character moment. You're like, yeah, you are an important character. That's a cool thing.
I love that she got a TARDIS.
She gets four knocks as well.
Four knocks. I love that she got a TARDIS. I loved the TARDIS, the new TARDIS. I was slightly disappointed when he barrels back into his own TARDIS.
Yeah,
and we've got his own console.
So could you not have just given Clara that one?
Look how spectacularly it works.
Yeah.
It's mostly the original design.
Clayton Hickman on Twitter, former Doctor Who magazine editor, last night was like posting lots of photos of kind of comparisons between and just how meticulously they were recreating that original TARDIS set.
Yeah.
But for modern cameras and for a modern set. So stunning.
Yeah.
Utterly stunning. Just the sound design in there as well. And just the Doctor in a black coat and a white shirt.
Yeah.
Well, Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, looking like Clint Eastwood in The Unforgiven. He's the lawman, that kind of thing.
In this old TARDIS. And it's amazing.
Yeah. So, it was very, the acting was extraordinary. I loved it. I mean, I loved O'Healy, O'Hyla. Mm-hmm. I loved the Sisterhood of Karn.
Yeah, they were back. It's really good that what I love about the Sisterhood of Karn in modern Doctor Who is that they showed up in a 6-minute online exclusive episode.
Yeah.
And then they show up again in The Magician's Apprentice.
Yeah.
And it's just like, they're just an old order. You don't need to have this like long, flowery kind of exposition. Yeah. They're just this ancient order of immortal women that the Doctor trusts to talk to about stuff.
They're like a surrogate home for him. Yeah. I think Jenna Coleman is extraordinary.
Yeah.
In this, it's on a par with a great performance she played in Face the Raven.
Mm-hmm. And quite rightly so, because it's the continuation of that.
Yeah, it's her from that moment stretched out for ages. There were some incredibly satisfying punch the air moments, and there were some things where I was just like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I have to say, as much as I loved it, the ending. I mean, I loved the moment where Clara leaves and she gets inside the TARDIS, and then the diner dematerializes around and I was like, that's cool. And then he gets back in the TARDIS and it just goes like full cheesy.
Yeah.
I was like, I kind of like this, but I also kind of hate this at the same
time. I did quite like I mean, I love the new Sonic screwdriver.
The new Sonic's great. I want one for Christmas.
And I liked that he was back being the Doctor again, because I just wasn't sure exactly what had been taken from him or not, which leads me to talk about. So the Doctor's 100% half human then, is that? That's basically what has definitely been said.
Well.
No, okay, and not necessarily in
it's
language.
It's not been overtly stated.
No, it's not been overtly stated.
But the way Capaldi plays it, I think,
No, I don't mean the way he plays it. I mean the way that the neural thing that was going to wipe Clara's memory was going to wipe every moment of their time together, much like Donna. But it only half worked with him. Because presumably, only half of the tuning mechanism that it was...
I never thought about that.
So that's why he remembers Mummy on the Orient Express. That's why he remembers the Ice Warriors.
The Ice Warrior and the Submarine.
So he remembers the adventure, he just doesn't remember who he shared the adventure with. So only half worked, because half of him is human, and only that half was affected by the neural block or whatever. So, I mean, that's what I read into.
Yeah, actually.
That's why he can remember and sit and tell a vague notion of the story to Clara.
Yeah.
because presumably that, because presumably if that's what would happen
to just,
Clara,
in my head I just assumed that was just because it was a familiar face and then that was triggering something in him that you didn't understand, but when you put it like that,
because presumably there would have been, if that had been Clara and that was what the result was with her, there would have been literally no point having done it.
Because
she just remembers all the adventures but not how she got to each of those.
Yeah.
Surely that would be worse for her.
Seem to remember.
And then it was on the Orient Express, on space with a mummy, and I've no idea how I got in there or got out of it. But oh my god, I've just gone mad. What that, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
So yeah. So again, not overtly stated, but presumably that's what that was.
Good point. Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. Is that, have we exhausted it?
I don't know. Have we?
Let's talk about another negative.
Oh, do we
the
have to...
Christmas special looks shit.
I don't know, right?
Oh my god!
It looks like a Christmas special.
It looks like a Christmas special.
Because let's not forget, right? Last Christmas was very good.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But let's not forget, and this is coming from the guy who hates Voyage of the Damned.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that Doctor Who at Christmas is all about fun and frivolity.
It was 30 seconds of solely gurning by every Greg Davis gurning, Matt Lucas gurning, the Doctor gurning. There's one point where the Doctor and River fall down and you hear them going clonk, blah, blah. Some sort of like comedy.
I think it looks like an absolute hoot.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I'm not sure. I thought it looked awful. Them chucking a guy's head around in the TARDIS.
Greg Davis's head, no less.
Yeah, I know, but oh my god. Right, okay. So anyway, that's just what happened, isn't it? So
yeah.
Okay, so we'll draw it in because in a couple of years' time we are going to be dealing with this again
in more depth, and we'll probably pair it out with the Big Finish Audio Neverland.
Maybe there was a lot of that Doctor and Charlie's feel to the whole thing, which is a shame that I perceived that, because it did detract from this, like, the brilliant, the exceptional writing,
yeah,
the exceptional performances that were going on there.
Yeah, oh, it's really cleverly written, and I think people who say, oh, you know, Stephen Moffat's tired, he's run out of ideas. No, he hasn't.
What you don't like about what Stephen Moffat does is that he continues to think about Doctor Who.
He doesn't just write Doctor Who to a template.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing new things with it. He's...
Yeah, I mean, see, Doctor Who is about change fundamentally. But in terms of production of Doctor Who, it has very, very rarely changed. If you look at the final season of McCoy, it looks like the same programme as the very first season of Hartnell. Like, it's made episodically. There are certain just tropes and rules and cliches and all that kind of stuff you get all the way through. And they do the same when we get to 2005. Series 1, Series 2, Series 3, Series 4, and then Moffat's first series as well.
Yeah.
It's all just done to a template.
Uh-huh.
And people are just annoyed that it's constantly changing. They can't predict it. It's not safe. And it's daring them to think about things and feel stuff.
Yeah.
In a different way. So while I'm sitting here complaining about it, going, oh, I don't know how to feel about it, and oh, there's some bad things happen, you know, I would rather that than another Journey's End or another Last of the Time Lords.
Mm. Yeah.
Which are essentially the same story told twice.
Yeah, true.
Told again. True. You know.
For the first time in a very long time, actually, possibly the first time ever, I've felt that the finale has tied up and married up with everything that's gone before it.
Yeah.
In a satisfying way.
It's been a
way.
Finale rather than a big adventure at the end.
Yeah.
Which
has kind of had some crowbarred bits in where we go, look, we were referencing this all along, honest.
Yeah.
I genuinely feel as if that this whole series has been very well planned, very tightly put together, and it's paid off brilliantly.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Well, I think I probably agree. I can't remember who said it, but I think I saw Gareth Roberts retweet it, which was somebody said, oh my goodness, one of the most divisive Doctor Who series.
I saw that. It was like, the most bafflingly divisive series of Doctor Who has a bafflingly divisive finale.
It's I take my hat off to the bravery of the series.
Yeah.
There's a lot to enjoy. There's a lot not to enjoy. Possibly too much navel gazing.
Maybe.
For the series.
Maybe.
But it's not bad. I don't. This is not. This is not, as some people are making out, the final nail in the coffin of Doctor Who.
No, not at all.
This has been a very...
If anything, it's striking it out in another direction. Well, not in another direction. It's always going to be Doctor Who. It's always going to be the Doctor turning up, saving the day. But it's dealing with themes and, you know, it's dealing with grief and loss and friendship and love and in a way that feels more, to me, feels more genuine than a lot of Russell T stuff.
Yeah. And, no, I perfectly agree with that.
And, I don't know. I don't know why that is, because I'm on record, you know, over, 40 episodes of this podcast, that I really love what Russell T does with Doctor Who. But for me, I identify a lot more with the emotional side of Stephen Moffat's Doctor Who than I do with the emotional side of Russell D. Davis's Doctor Who.
Yeah. I find it more profound.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's...
I found Moffat... He started as a comedy writer, and now he's moved on to more weighty productions.
Yeah.
You can never say he was a comedy writer. He's funny, he's always got a sense
of... But I mean, something like Cuffling still had that kind of humanity to it. It was never kind of like...
Yeah. I mean, as a comedian... I utterly envy his ability to identify just very emotional, it's just a comic perception that he has.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't mention it in the last one, but I absolutely loved the stuff about how shit it must be to be a door.
Yeah.
In Heaven Sent.
That, yeah.
When I said that, that's not funny. Just funny, it was just like, oh fuck. I mean, how did I not think of that?
How do you begin
being a door?
How do you begin to write that? And
that was excellent.
Yeah. And actually, Richie tweeted something earlier on, because he wasn't a huge fan of Hellbent.
Yeah.
But he said, maybe I'll come around to it in time. I loved how Douglas Adamsy that last shot was of, you know, the American diner going off in one direction and the police box going off in the other. And I think there is something in that about Stephen Moffat's writing. He is very influenced by Douglas Adams in the one way. He's very funny, very clever, and has these sort of big sci-fi ideas, and that's that side of Douglas Adams. But then also he has that sense of humanity and emotional realism that Russell T has. And I think then that makes him the perfect showrunner for Doctor Who.
Yeah, well, I'm glad he's coming back for another series, whenever in 2018 we get to it.
It's interesting, though, that this could have been Stephen Moffat's final
series,
Doctor Who. Well, I mean, Christmas special aside, obviously, that's the one. That was the one that he thought would be his last script. And I wonder if that's why it's a finale that's so preoccupied with saying goodbye.
Yeah,
I wonder if that, you know, and possibly. I wonder what series 10 is going to be now, because it's kind of like, all right, I'm staying on, am I? Okay, fair enough. What do I write about now?
Maybe it's just a lot of angry treading water. Maybe that's what it'll be. Well, that seems an opportune moment to bring it in. Thank you for joining us over this.
I've enjoyed doing these
extra
ones.
Season.
Because I know at first I was kind of just like, all right, so basically I can't enjoy Doctor Who as it's going out just as little as I enjoy Doctor Who now rewatching it on DVD for the podcast.
Yeah.
And watching with this critical eye. But actually, these have been fun.
Yeah.
And I find that you guys, you know, you listeners, we've had a lot more instant response from these ones than we have from other ones.
Yeah.
As well. It's been great to be just part of the conversation.
We've got a finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
Can't feel anything, but we've got a finger on the pulse.
So I'm sure we're probably... I've got a Christmas tree sitting next to me right now. Yeah. I'm sure we're going to do a Christmas episode. We'll maybe talk about the Christmas special.
Yeah.
The Husbands of River Song.
Yeah, which looks great.
I don't know.
Typical Christmas crap. We'll just we'll move on.
I think Peter Capaldi and Alex Kingston will work together a lot more convincingly than Matt Smith and Alex Kingston.
Maybe. We'll see.
But we'll see.
It was only in a couple of weeks' time, anyway.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
It's mad.
Not long at all.
It's mad, the Christmas special.
The time that we've got to wait. Oh, good. Oh, okay, here it is.
Oh, it's here now.
Yeah. It's like, do you remember Jim Russell T. Davis era?
Yeah.
Like, we would have to miss a week because of the Eurovision Song Contest. Uh-huh. That's essentially what's happening here.
Yeah.
We're like, it's not next week, but it's the week after.
Week after that.
So thanks for joining us, guys, genuinely. And we'll be back soon with the normal run, which no big milestone, we're just going to restart halfway through series 4.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Cheerio.